G7. Number 19A.
All right, we go on in our discussion of the new discoveries and see what its implications are when we regard it from the metaphysical, from the divine metaphysical standpoint. We are talking about the paradigm shift that is taking place. The paradigm shift is always something that demands a lot from each one because he has to change his whole structure of consciousness. And that is not always easy and cannot be done from one day to the next. It is today what they call a paradigm shift, like the Copernicus or Copernican change, the Copernican paradigm shift. And I want to say a few words about the Copernican paradigm shift. Just a little bit funny. You know that before Copernicus we had the Ptolemaic sense of the universe with the Earth at the center and the Sun going around the Earth. And that was a very obvious and natural picture of the world, because you could see that the Sun was rising up in the morning and going over the horizon down in the evening. So it was very natural that the Sun was going around the Earth. And yet it was wrong. So when Copernicus came and introduced the Copernican worldview, that the Sun is standing still and the Earth was orbiting around the Sun and was also turning around its own axis. Can you think back? That was about 400 years ago. Just think back at that stage. Say you were living in a village, you were perhaps a farmer, and all what you had to do is to look after the cattle, after the sheep, and see that you had your breakfast and your lunch and your dinner and go to bed in time. And then somebody comes along and says, look here, that's not what you are really seeing in the world, that the Earth is standing still and that the Sun is turning around it. It's the opposite way. And then you were thinking, gosh, what a new story. Is that man nuts? Because he had very good reasons. He said, I don't feel at all that the Earth is with a terrific speed running around the Sun. I don't feel any speed. I stay put. Yeah? So that was a great change. And he would say, and that man says that the Earth is turning around its axis? No, that can't be. That's silly. That's absolutely silly. Because if it would be that way, at midnight I would fall out of my bed. And so on. Can you see what the paradigm shift demands of us? To get rid of an old concept in spite that it seems very logical. In spite that our senses would say, well, the old one is a real one, the new one I can't perceive, that's hallucination, that's not right. So a new paradigm shift is on us today. So these people all talk about a new Copernican paradigm shift, a change that is as big and as revolutionary as at the time of Copernicus. The question is, do we think, well, these people are nuts and we go home and go on the old way? Or do we think they may be right? And we go home and think about it in a different way and try to think also in a different frame of reference? That's the question. If we do, we have much more the chance to think in the new reference of Christian Science, going out from one principle, and that's infinite principle, having an infinite idea, and that the divine principle of the universe will interpret the universe, as Mrs. Eddy says. And not as our physical senses interpret the universe. So a great paradigm shift is on us. We have to leave that dualistic sense on which we were basing all our thinking, that dualistic sense. Suddenly something becomes monistic. It became even spiritually monistic, that we have only one, that we have no more two, that we not even have a somethingness of all and the nothingness of nothing, which we had only the allness of all. All is mind. And then she says that mind is all, in all, in every situation is its all. That's quite a paradigm shift. We thought about determinism, and suddenly we have to see that that is wrong, that actually we are living in a world of indeterminism. Again, a new concept where we see that Christ determines what he wants to do and not what we determine what to do. Suddenly we live in a universe where we have no more the duality of object and subject, where we have the oneness of subject and object, that again, that you are the world and the world is you. How are you going to criticize the world and your neighbor when the neighbor is you? That gives quite something to think about. What about your enemies? That enemy is you, within you. The universe is within us, and I'm the universe. So we begin to feel a great responsibility for the universe. Because the universe is me. So we can see that is no more true what we were thinking, that the cause is leading to an effect, and that's that. We begin to see that there is a cybernetic law at work which has no cause and effect, which has no beginning and ending, that it is an eternal spiraling circle lifting ourselves up and up and up. Quite a new concept. And so, step by step, we can see that we have a completely new sense of science. That we don't have to investigate the textbook as a science of yesterday, but as a science of today. And that is one of the most difficult things. We are still thinking about the textbook in an atomistic way. We are not yet thinking about the universe in a categorical universe, in a categorical thinking, in a system thinking, in a structural thinking, in a matrix thinking, in a model of being thinking. These are terrific changes. But we can see perhaps first intellectually, mentally, that that is true, what is demanded of us, or what the new development is demanding of us, it's true. But until that concept becomes consciousness, our consciousness, spiritual consciousness, it may take a lot of time, it makes a lot of effort, it demands a constant awareness that we always go back to the right standpoint. Constantly we are falling away from the right standpoint and going from the wrong standpoint, and it takes quite a bit to stick to the new standpoint. Yes, an interesting thing happened at that Copenhagen conference, which I was saying, where really the dualistic sense fell and was overcome. There was an astrophysicist there, I can't tell you the name right away, who said, I only made a note of what he said. He said, for a reasoning scientist, in 1927, that was a conference, in 1927, religion has become possible. Religion has become possible. The scientist can be a religionist, can be an ontologist, we would say today. So that science no more stands in the way against religion, against metaphysics, against really ontology, but that it has become possible to be a scientist, a scientific ontologist. Yes, so we begin to see quite a new reality. That was our question right at the beginning, what is reality? And we begin to see quite a new reality. And I just want to summarize in other terms than before, again, what that new reality is. Again, to impress the thought, it does not exist of matter, but of spirit. That's a new reality. It is much more a grand thought than a universe that looks like a big machine. Spirit and the world are of one and the same reality. We have no more the reality of spirit, and besides that, reality of the universe, which are different. They become one, because mind is all. They have brought back matter right back to the mental, and the mental into the metaphysical, and over into the one mind and one spirit. So that, they say, matter cannot that we cannot explain matter. That's what we try to do. We try to explain matter, what it is. How can we explain something that does not exist? We can't. But we first have to come to the insight that matter does not exist, and then we drop that question, what is matter? We drop it because we cannot explain matter. We can only, that Dolly said that many times also, we can only explain matter away. Not to explain matter, but to explain matter away, that there is no matter. So the whole subject, what is matter, disappears. I quote natural scientists, nothing that we perceive is reality. So nothing that we perceive, and if we look at each other and we look around, it's not reality. We don't see reality. We know it fundamentally, intellectually, because we know that we have a universe of ideas and that mortals are not the idea of man. We know that, but we don't believe it, and we are not consistent in it, and so we always have a people universe, a material universe, though we know that it's wrong. It's only a question of honesty within ourselves that says, oh, I'm really dishonest. I'm really a hypocrite to the nth degree. I state something in Christian Science and believe the very opposite. Oh, huh? We begin to realize something. They say it is that reality, what we think is a reality, is a deception, a swarm of imagination. I look into a swarm of imagination. Yes? It is constant, imaginable hallucination. Oh gosh, we go to a dinner as hallucination. Huh? Well, we have to know the aim before we start. Huh? Know the aim, we know that it takes step by step to get to that aim. A cybernetician said the following thing. Listen to that. the human mind, that's that mind which we usually use, the human mind does not perceive what is there, but that which it believes to be there. So the human mind believes in a universe that is out there, a material universe with the celestial bodies, but it perceives, it thinks what is there, that it thinks it's there, but it is not there. A physicist said, the real is inaccessible. The real is inaccessible. It is veiled. We can't see the real. Forever it is imperceptible. Forever it is imperceptible. Because this is the enigma, and the enigma is the enigma of spirit. Do you know how the fourth chapter in the textbook starts with that enigma? Mortal existence is an enigma. And what can resolve that enigma? Goes on, only the revelation of truth can solve that enigma. Only by changing standpoint we can resolve that enigma. Yes, that's good. So we go on and see that there is a transcendental reality, the reality of spirit, and that reality is order. That reality, I quote again so that I'm sure I'm not saying something which I haven't misread. That reality is not based on material dimensions. We come to the dimensions. There are infinite dimensions. It is the result of a transcendental order. So reality is the result of a transcendental order, not of our order which we believe. It is stranger that we have felt. It's stranger than we think. And even stranger than we can think. We cannot think as strange as it is strange. It's stranger than we think, and it's even stranger than how we could think. We cannot even think so strange that we can see reality. Beyond the material universe exists a maximum of information, and we come to a new field. Namely, that reality is a reality of information, of maximum information. And we come to the information theory. Yes, beyond our universe, there is a cause for the harmony of all causes. So we are wrong if we always ask ourselves, what is the cause of something? Instead of seeing there is only one cause, and that is the one transcendental cause, the cause of all causes. And that is where we change our standpoint to the divine principle, to the divine mind, and see that's the only cause. So the old materialism is no more valid today. We have made a step which leads us through science, small s, through sciences, which leads us through science to God, to reality. So we have made a step which leads us through science to reality, to God. The earth will help the woman. Can you see why I put so much stress on that quote in Apocalypse? The earth will help the woman. What we are considering for many hours now about the universe was really the earth. We were considering the real earth, and that real earth has been slowly come to the surface. The wrong earth, the wrong heaven and the wrong earth is passing away, and a new heaven and a new earth is coming to the surface. And that is that we find also that the sciences begin to see. So we live in an intelligent, ordered universe. In every part, now we come to a higher sense of it, in every part of that universe operates the omnipresence of that reality. In every part operates that reality. Is that not something Mr. Zaidi says, that every idea reflects the infinite? Every idea reflects not only just itself as an isolated idea, but reflects a whole, namely the infinite. The universe is intelligent. We were thinking the brain is intelligent, that mortals are intelligent, and there are some people that are more intelligent than others. It all depended on what they might think is in the brain and the construction of the brain. They don't know quite. They only find out, namely, like Eccles, E-C-C-L-E-S, Eccles, a very prominent neurophysiologist, he said, the brain doesn't think. The brain doesn't think. The universe thinks. We're living in a thinking universe. And if you hear Chopra, the medical man, he says, the universe thinks, not the brain thinks. That's a medical man. The universe is intelligent, not we are intelligent. The universe is a universe of information, of extreme intelligent information. The universe thinks. This intelligence transcends all that exists on our level of reality. That's why we don't understand it, because our level of reality is too small, is too limited, is a local mind universe, whereas they begin to see the divine mind is really that which can perceive the universe. So the intelligent universe is transcending what we think is the universe. Yes. Order springs from the will of the first cause, from an organizing intelligence which transcends our reality. There is another reality than our reality. So instead of seeing and explaining our reality, instead of trying to explain what is matter, we better explain it away. We better explain our reality away, instead of looking deeper into that reality and see that that is not our reality. That brings me quickly back to the textbook, just to show the parallel line of thinking. I come to the chapter Genesis in the textbook, and you know in the chapter Genesis we have first the explanation of the first record of creation, and then there comes two verses which do not belong really to the first record of creation and does not yet quite belong to the second record of creation. It's the verse, chapter 2, verse 4 and 5. And only later then the second record of creation starts. There seems to be there a bridge, a funny bridge, which we may not always have understood. Anyway, I haven't. It was always a bit a question mark. It's always something that I read and I believed, I believed in it because Mrs. Eddy said so. But now we can understand it. That is the part where the Bible says, or Mrs. Eddy says, or shall I first tell what the Bible says now? I go along my notes, that's better, and I don't get off the track. Mind, capital M, made the plant of the field before it was in the earth. Can we think that out logically on our level of reality? No. That the plant was in the field before it was in the field. Before it was in the earth. Can we figure that out on the old sense of reality? We cannot. But now, after we have seen what reality is, we can understand it. We can understand that reality is a reality which has nothing to do with the human reality, the so-called reality. That has nothing to do. Our human reality cannot see reality. Real reality cannot be seen with our human reality. So therefore, that passage is very explanatory. It says, the divine mind, which is the real reality, has made the plant, because that reality, that mind, has always an idea and always manifests itself as infinite idea. Because from the infinite mind come all the manifestations of mind, from the rolling of the stars down to the potato patch. It existed already in mind as idea. And only when we translate it into the human so-called reality, then we have to see the plant in the field, in the earth, in matter. So the plant grows not because of seed or soil. We always felt that it grows because of seed and soil. No, but because growth is the eternal mandate of mind. Can you see? It's always the same thing. Always a thesis, an antithesis, and then we stop. And that's wrong. We must go to the synthesis of it and see a layer above the thesis and antithesis, to a level above that. And here she shows the level above seed and soil seed and soil is what? Not seed and soil, but growth. That's an idea of mind. Because there is growth, an idea of mind, you can see the seed before it, or the plant before it is in the field. Just as an artist, he sees the idea before he paints it. Before he gives his form, he sees the idea. I'm not an artist, but I think somehow it's right. That he has a concept, an idea, and then, only then, after that, he puts it into matter, so to say, puts it into the canvas or chisels out the granite or anything like that, gives it form. So this is the answer that we have also in the physical world, that everything has its cause, so to say, its origin, really, in that realm of the transcendental reality.